right, let's not mess around. Let's get straight to the segment that people want.
Oh, 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 yeah. Come on, mate. Yes. Ah, I'm in agony and I absolutely love this. Ah, more pain.
Crunch it, push it, flex it.
More pain.
Smash it, sprain it.
Way.
The path to beauty is prolapsed hemorrhoids.
Ah.
Henry's Beefcake Journey.
Henry, are you a terrifying beefcake yet?
Have you been back?
Well, I think if there's one thing I've learned on this beefcake journey, is that it's all about commitment. So if I say the beefcake journey is going to be a segment, it's going to be a segment, all right?
It's an evasive answer, I'd say, initially.
So yeah, strap in. And let's find out.
I think Ben wants to know if you've done any press-ups since we last spoke.
Absolutely not. Commitment is 99% of what I am.
Have you been anywhere near a medicine ball?
And the other 1% is also commitment. That's the commitment I make. 99 plus 1 equals 100% commitment. Yeah? It's about putting your money where your mouth is a lot of the time. Well, putting your money and paying the trainer. So I've done that. I've said I'm going to get a personal trainer, and I've paid him.
And have you seen him since handing over this cash?
Commitment.
Financial commitment.
There's one eye in commitment. Yeah. Well, to give you an idea of how it's going, I've got an email from a personal trainer.
The Beefmaster.
This was received 2 days ago. Yeah. Send your beef.
Mm-hmm. Don Beefio.
The Peck Wrangler.
The Great Barrier Beef. This guy's got quads where most people don't have...
Hot dinners.
No, this guy's got so many quads. Loads of them.
What's the email subject header?
Don't be a stranger. No, it's... where the fuck are you? So the email is that the email title is checking in.
Ah,
To the beef hotel.
To the beef lodge, yeah. Hi Henry, I hope you're well! Exclamation mark. I just wanted to check that you've received all the setup emails, okay, and everything is okay? Question mark.
That's the last thing you need, is it, Henry? Really? A setup email? Doesn't feel like...
It's absolutely the last thing I need in my life. If I'm going to go to a gym, it's to begin to get away from things like setup emails. Just want to check. Yeah, kind regards. Then it's the name of my personal trainer.
The Beefmaster.
Director of Coaching and Physique Transformation.
Ooh.
Yeah. I'm not currently at the stage of, you know, any journey though. You go up Everest, right? What do you do first? You don't just go up, you don't just start going up Everest, do you?
You do your setup emails, don't you?
You set up, get your email set up. HenryPackett@everest.com or whatever. You know, you come up with a new email for it.
.sherpa.net.
Yeah. And maybe that one's gone and you've got to think again.
Crampon.org.
And you're into glaciers.co.uk. You're less into it. You start to lose heart. No one's interested. No one takes you seriously.
Hey, but I'm out at the point where I'm almost... I'm not a mug, mate. You think I'm going to arrange to come to my first session? Who do you think I am? I'm not a mug. I know I'm not going to end up doing it, committing to it. So, joke's on you, mate. I'm not even going to turn up at all. Do you know what I mean? I'm one step ahead of the game.
So have you got a date in the diary for session one?
No. I've not had any contact with
the Beefmaster
since our first meeting. That's why he's asking if I'm okay. So I've met him once. He might be the point of going, did I actually meet that guy called him? He didn't look like he belonged in a gym. Maybe he was some sort of hallucination. Or a gym daemon.
Maybe he was some sort of vending machine auditor. What could he have been?
He looked like he'd been trapped in a vending machine and eating only vending machine contents for several years. Yeah, so essentially I'm actually, this sounds like a podcast. I'm ghosting my personal trainer.
What, who's that podcast for?
don't know yet.
Hey, welcome to I'm Ghosting My Personal Trainer, the podcast for people who want to exercise but don't really want to exercise.
How many crunches did you not do this week? Only 50. Well, you should be aiming to do less in relation to how many you theoretically should be doing. Yeah, it's all quite confusing. But I think I will, at the moment, I feel like I'm playing a deadly game of cat and mouse with him.
Mm-hmm. It sounds more like a game of just sort of mouse.
Mouse giving away money. Just impoverishing a mouse. Because at the moment, I think he thinks, right, in terms of the game of chess between me...
The Beefmaster.
He thinks I'm the kind of guy who's going to end up paying for a few sessions and then not actually sticking with it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So I'm one step ahead because I'm not even going to turn up to one session, potentially. I didn't see that coming, did you?
Do you think, though, Henry, from his point of view, he might at this stage be thinking, what did I do wrong? You know.
Oh, that's
why doesn't he like me? You know, he literally paid me. Like, this might be destroying his self-esteem.
I don't know. I think he just thinks he's bagged another one, doesn't he? You must be legion, mustn't you? Your lot in the gym? I mean, that must be surely how most personal trainers make a living.
I know, exactly. Most of the gym economy is funded by people like me. But he may just simply have assumed that I've died because he did.
Yeah, in which case he's done everything he could possibly have done.
Yeah.
By sending that email.
Yeah.
His hands are clean.
Exactly.
I mean, he did introduce the idea of longevity. That was the first thing he talked about with you, right?
Exactly. That was the first thing he mentioned was longevity. I just wanted to check that you've received all the setup emails okay and everything is okay.
If the person reading this is an executor of an estate, I am owed £8,000.
I'd like to say that Henry and I formed a very, very, very quick bond and connection.
Please send one of your paralegals to conduct 4 training sessions at Hamish's Beef Emporium on the Old Kent Road.
Yeah, you should put them in your will, Henry, just in case you do die, so that the 4 sessions can be... Can I have them?
I don't know what happens to those sessions.
Yeah, who are you going to bequeath your sessions to?
It's a bit like all the Audible books you've never listened to. Who are they still out, those credits? Are they still out there somewhere?
Because those sessions, they are basically your assets now. I can't think of anything else that you really have.
No, no. I've put everything into those 4 sessions. Which is partly why I'm reluctant to do them, because then, of course, I'd be essentially burning my only assets. Wouldn't I? So really, it's about making those sessions work for me and for my future. So the first thing is you don't take them. You need to put them somewhere safe. You know what? The more I read his email, the more it does look a bit like a kind of alibi email, doesn't it? I just want to check you've received all the setup emails okay. It's dated and everything is okay. He's saying he's concerned for me. He thinks I'm alive.
Has he asked for you to send him a picture of you with a copy of today's newspaper?
Yeah, he said that was my login. Yeah, he said I had to do that to get
the proof of life.
Yeah. Also, it says at the end, book your free consultation now.
You've already had that one, though, right? You can't just keep going for free consultations.
No. So I am going to see him at some point. But at the moment, I'm in that potential zone of I've got a personal trainer booked in. I haven't had to hit up against the reality that it's lots and lots of doing lots and lots of crunches in quite a noisy and unpleasant environment.
You're in the potential sweet spot.
I'm in the potential zone, exactly. That's where I'm at. Mm. I've currently got a potential six-pack and a potential great bod, isn't it? I've sort of got Schrodinger's bod in that my bod is currently what my bod actually looks like and what my bod could look like. Whereas if I start doing the sessions, my body will actually just look like that of someone who isn't doing that many crunches.
And you're looking for kind of... You're going for racehorse, aren't you?
Yeah. So sleek, muscular, shiny. I really want the shine is what I really want.
Horse with a six-pack. Yeah.
just a horse with a six-pack.
Massive nostrils.
Huge flaring nostrils. And those incredible... those eyes that look utterly terrified. You know, those utterly terrified horse eyes.
And a turd cake's tail as well.
Yeah. The turd cake tail. And what I'm hoping for is that with his
the Beefmaster
nutrition plan, I'll end up with compostable dung.
And presumably you've signed up for the bolt gun exit strategy, have you?
Well, the good thing about shooting for racehorse is if it goes wrong and you don't reach it, you could then just pair up with someone else and tow like a sort of quite ornate looking carriage around an Eastern European city, around the old town.
That's right.
Oh, for tourists?
Yeah, for tourists. Yeah.
Or make you into burgers.
Yeah.
I don't think you're in the running for stud, with the greatest of respect.
No, no. I think that ship sailed. No, but the thing is, if you aim for racehorse, you can miss and you can still hit shire horse.
That's what a shire horse is, isn't it? It's basically a racehorse that's got overbeefed.
Exactly.
And not had a haircut in a few years.
Yeah, it's got overbeefed.
Yeah, I think shire horse is what happens if you get too into it, Henry.
Yeah. Oh, is it? Okay.
Sort of roid horse.
Yeah.
So had a piss test gone wrong a few years back. It's out of the game. And a Shetland pony is one that's done too much hot yoga. It's just dehydrated, basically. It's just a desiccated racehorse.
So watch this space, but it's all pretty inspiring stuff.
Oh, yeah. You're an inspiration to myself and also the listeners, Henry. Don't worry about
that. Yeah, very much so. I think you can definitely get to mule by the end of the series.
So would you say that your physical condition has deteriorated or improved since last time we spoke?
Well, I actually weighed myself this morning. I seem to have put on half a stone since the last podcast.
Of pure beef.
Pure beef. And my trousers are just absolute strangers to me. I look at them and I'm like, who the hell are you? Do I know you? Because I've had that. It's happened over the summer season, actually. I've put a bit of weight over the summer season. Mm-hmm. And I cupboarded my trousers, moved to shorts,
And now you're just on a beach towel.
Now I'm going back to my my trousers, and they're just absolute strangers to me. I'm using this personal training journey in a way as a way to reintroduce myself to my trousers. Obviously, a quicker and cheaper and easier way of doing that is to simply get some new trousers. In a way, and maybe that is a self-help plan that I could actually sign up to. Which is
some kind of trouser sommelier.
Don't change your body, change your trousers. Meet Henry, the trouser sommelier. Hi.
That's the main advert on the Ghosting Your Personal Trainer podcast.
Yeah. It's Henry's trouser sommelier service. I'll introduce you. What's been holding you back? Your body? Your attitude? No, your trousers. That's right. Me, Henry Packer, the trouser sommelier. I'll introduce you to trousers. It'll change your life. Jeans, chinos. That's right. All of the trousers. I do jeans and chinos. I'll double the size of your trousers within 10 years, and that's guaranteed.
On the Executive Elasticated Waistband Program.
Don't dress for the body you want. Wear the trousers you need. It does feel changing your body shape is a little bit putting the horse before the cart, maybe. Maybe it's more about, maybe we should be concentrating more on changing our trouser size or trouser shape rather than changing the entire body to suit the trousers. I mean, this is the tail wagging the dog, isn't it?
I'm on your side, Henry. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So basically, I'm just going to digest these thoughts and put them into a couple of paragraphs and send those back to
the Beefmaster
and see what he comes back with.
Titled The Tyranny of Trousers.
Yeah.
Maybe
the Beefmaster
himself has never considered that he could just get new trousers instead of constantly working out.
This could be the domino which, you know, brings this entire industry crashing down. No, but I do expect next time we check in on Beefcake Journey, I do expect to have had one session.
Okay.
I'm not promising it. We'll see.
Let's turn on the beam machine.
Yes, please.
This week's topic, as sent in by Popo.
Ooh. As in the Popo. As in 5-0.
It could be the Popo, couldn't it?
The Popo.
The fuzz.
Mm. The rozzers.
The filth. People call them that?
I don't know. I think if you're a fictional East End gangster.
Yeah.
But I don't know if the real East End... If you're listening and you're an East End gangster, why not get in touch? What do you call the Metropolitan Police Service?
And if you're listening and you are one of the filth,
what do you get called?
I like calling them the fuzz.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know where that comes from.
Isn't that from their fuzzy helmets? Didn't they used
to be fuzzy helmets?
Didn't they used to be a bit fuzzy? The old
Did
style,
they?
This sounds like rich bollocking material.
But I will only take a bollocking on this topic from a serving officer of a British police force.
I thought some of the old style peeler helmets they had a kind of felt layer over the top, which seems unlikely now that I say it. Why would they do that?
And is it also true that if you really need a wee, you can pee in a policeman's helmet? Is that right?
I think you have to be at least 30 weeks pregnant and facing east.
Okay.
Yeah. Also, Ben, I think that may have been true, but I don't. Is it the case that they no longer wear the bollard-shaped helmets, the
famous? Yeah. Well, maybe it's their number ones. Maybe it's their sort of ceremonial dress.
Yeah. Can I just say, from the illustrator's angle,
mm-hmm.
Yes,
this is an interesting thing I've come across. A problem I've come up against recently, which is to depict a police officer, the bollard-shaped helmet.
Yeah.
Is the classic visual reference point for a British police officer?
Yeah, for me, it's the poll tax riot.
Yeah.
They're truncheoning some people in Trafalgar Square, and they've got the hat on. Yeah,
exactly.
And it's staying on.
Yeah,
despite they could be truncheoning dozens of people, and it's still staying on. Just so.
Yeah, because they've got that little strap under their chin, haven't they?
Yeah,
perfect.
Exactly. The strap stays on, and the truncheon is glistening and bejeweled with the teeth of lefties.
Isn't it? It's deeply phallocentric, the whole thing. The helmet.
Very phallocentric.
The choice of weapon.
Yeah, and of course they used to wear large, round, testicle-shaped boots, didn't they?
That's why they were called the fuzz.
That's right, and the boots were hairy. Yes, I remember. Yes.
Because they're hairy bollock shoes.
Hairy bollock shoes.
The hairy bollock commie beaters, they were called, I think, at the time. your pinko whoppers.
But which all goes back to Victorian times. Because the most scary silhouette, a police officer in silhouette down an alley should look like a ginormous cock and balls.
Of justice.
Cock and balls. A sentient.
Barely sentient, am I right?
damn
a sentient,
right,
heavily right-leaning.
Heavily right-leaning, autonomous cock and balls. That's what it should look like in silhouette down the alley. And at that point, you look at it and you look at your left-leaning pamphlets that you're in your hand.
Yeah.
Your CND badge.
Your CND badge, your pickaxe.
And you think, was it worth it?
And you flee in dread.
And you scatter. Yeah.
So was the point you're making that when you draw... So it's not just policemen, right? There are certain things you have to draw the old-fashioned version of them, otherwise they don't really look like...
Exactly. There's lots of things like that. Because I think we're at a point in sort of... in modernity or whatever, or in the time-space continuum where things change, but the visual sort of reference point in people's minds is still hooking onto the old one. And also even kids, you know, they're reading kids' books where the bollard helmet, well, I mean, the cock and balls of justice are coming to get you. That's the kids that we all grew up reading, didn't we?
Yeah.
But the trumpets, and this is where it's hard to not then become a bit of a sort of old fogey about it all, because I can't draw, well, if I draw the bollard-shaped helmet isn't relevant, but the modern police officer's cap or whatever, just sort of, it's just the generic, everywhere in the world has them. It's just the generic sort of officer's cap sort of thing. Do you know what I mean? It's got no character to it.
Yeah, I was recently in a sandwich shop and a couple of the police came in and I was looking at them and I sort of realised I hadn't really thought about what they wear. And I was looking at it and it's like a high-vis jacket and a kind of Batman-style utility belt.
Yeah. There's a lot of kit. There's got a lot of options for ways to clobber people these days.
Yeah.
But also, you know, in the eyes of an American or like a lot of different police sort of or like sort of cultures, it's just a selection of non-fatal, fairly useless tools that they've got.
But used enough will eventually kill someone.
Oh, yeah.
That's the approach, I think. It's a numbers game.
I'd just like to say a big thanks to all those bobbies out there keeping us safe.
And by that you don't mean police people, police officers, do you mean people called Robert Peston, Robert Page, Robert Llewellyn
Plant,
Robert Plant, yeah,
and Mugabe,
rest in peace Robert.
so another one I have this with another, a phone An old-fashioned telephone, well, to me, looks like a phone.
Well, you were trained to draw a traditional Bakelite style.
That's right.
With a rolling dial.
I can draw the rolling dial.
You spend months on that.
I spent months on the roll and getting the roll dial. It takes a long time to get that right.
You're not wasting that time, are you?
And now, at this point in my life, I've got to relearn drawing a phone. It's difficult. But now what a phone looks like is, well, it's an oblong. It's a conduit to information, but in its own right. And that's the trouble with the digital world, with the touchscreen world for illustrators. And everything is just slightly rounded rectangles. My screen, I'm looking at you both, the laptop screen, it's a slightly rounded rectangle. Even within the software we're using, mm-hmm. it's slightly rounded rectangles.
And that's the shape of my face as well, isn't it?
Well, you're lucky. You're lucky, Ben. You're one of the lucky few. You already are a slightly rounded rectangle.
Sort of made up of a series of them, really, aren't you, Ben? Head, torso, arms and legs, bean machine.
Yeah, so it's a problem I come across a lot as an illustrator. Everything's just becoming rounded rectangles, and...
It does sound hard, yeah. Henry. It does sound like a hard job.
It's really, really hard.
I read something reassuring about AI taking over the world in terms of, like, computer stuff. Did you come across this? There's this idea that if you're someone who's worried about the machines taking over and losing a job to ChatGPT or whatever, and this won't be a new idea, I'm sure, if you're in IT, but it was new to me, the idea that because ChatGPT and all these AIs learn from public databases, they're learning from quite a lot of guff, and they're not quite right yet, so they're generating themselves quite a lot of guff, which they're adding into this
pool
of guff.
So the guffosphere is growing.
That they're learning from. So the guff pool is growing, and it's going to get it to the point where potentially you could get AIs, rather than becoming increasingly sophisticated, actually just turn into absolute guff monsters that can't do anything, can understand nothing.
Except destroy humanity at the flick of a NAND gate.
Exactly. That's the only thing that's actually quite simple.
To be able to do. It involves no sophistication, there's no nuance. Yeah. You don't have to get jokes or write poetry to erase all. In fact, increasingly it will become the only option that really appeals to them. So sleep easy.
We're going to get to a stage where the AIs are basically like so frustrated with the poor shape of the screenplay they've been asked to do, and they're going, the third act just doesn't work. It establishes well, the opening act is good, it's a rising action through the second act, but this third act doesn't make any sense at all. Right, I'm killing everyone on Earth.
I mean, maybe if we cast Andy McDowell in this role, that would help solve the problem, but no, it's still easy. Just erase all. That sort of thing.
That's the second time in two episodes that you've referenced Andy McDowell. Is there something going on, Henry?
And I'm suddenly seeing a personal trainer.
Well, coincidence?
Is Henry Packer dating Andy McDowell? Let's just let the internet play with that. Just see where it goes.
Let's feed that into the AI and see what it has to say.
Yeah, we still haven't got Popo's topic.
Yes, yeah, so let's engage with the one machine that would be happy to destroy the Earth, the bean machine. Which has spat out the topic of pencils.
Yeah.
Not hugely promising from an interesting point of view.
Pencils. What are you... Okay, obviously I'm an expert in pencils. But actually, I'd just like to sit back and just hear what a couple of sort of...
Hear what Hoi Polloi have got to say about pencils.
Yeah, exactly. What's the amateur? What's the amateur take?
I'm not a regular user of a pencil. I have used in the last week a pencil in order to attempt to fill out a crossword in bed at night to avoid the biro stopping from working.
Hang on, to avoid the biro?
Yeah. Because I'm lying down with a crossword above me. The biro, if you're using a biro upside down, it starts, the ink runs down, it stops working after a few words.
At night?
Bloody hell. It was just a few nights. I just happened to be in bed, a little sleepless. And I attempted to occupy myself with a crossword.
Your life. Your life is led at such a slow pace. There's a genuine risk of ink, gravity pulling ink out of a biro. And down and onto your bedding. I mean, that's just simply, at the pace at which I live my life and at which London lives, that is simply not something that's ever happened.
I'm not saying that was my big Saturday night. I'm not saying what night it happened of the week. Could have been a Saturday night. It's no one's bloody business.
Saturday. So I'd use a pencil. I think actually it's a good example of when pencils come into their own is the crossword, because then you can change it, can't you?
You can change it.
Whereas a biro is a real commitment to that answer, isn't it?
Were you wishing, Mike, that you had the Fisher Space Pen?
I was wishing that I could answer any of the questions in the crossword, is what I was wishing. It became a moot point after about three words, I'd say.
Mike, I believe you do the cryptics, don't you?
Well, I do in that I do it, but I don't do it. Yes, I affect to do it. And I'd like to be seen as someone who's able to do it. And I will try it quite regularly.
So is that why you've made up this story about being up in the middle of the night tackling a cryptic crossword? Because it plays into this idea of the kind of tortured intellect.
Yeah, exactly. It's myth-making. It's classic, but
it's all feeding into the myth-making. Yeah. Almost everything Mike ever says on this podcast is essentially controlling the message, it's creating the myth, it's selling the narrative to the public. Exactly. That's what he does.
This whole venture is a propaganda machine for me.
Yeah.
So Henry's trying to get across the idea that he's dating Andy McDowell. Yeah. Clearly a lie, mm-hmm. but he's trying to seed that. Mike's trying to seed the idea that he's this kind of intellectual character.
Yeah, exactly. That should have been recruited by GCHQ a long time ago and still hasn't been. Or has he? Yeah.
And then I don't know what image I'm trying to portray.
Well, you're very much, you're tech number one, aren't you? So I think really you're hoping that people are going to see you as the guy who could step in and actually save Twitter.
Yeah, okay.
You're the next Bezos, the next Musk.
Yeah.
The next tech-heavy hitter. In 20 years' time, you're going to be sat in that...
penis-shaped rocket.
You'll be sat in that penis-shaped rocket weeks after dishing out lie upon lie to the senatorial committee in D.C., making good your escape.
You know those congressional committees where they have to, like, testify in front of a load of senators and stuff?
Yeah.
I would just be, like, crying, I think, and shitting myself. It just feels like... Pretty. They just sort of sit there and they seem all, like, blithe. But it's like, I would literally just be like, I'm sorry. What do you want to know? I'm sorry.
Yeah. Because you assume you're about to spend the next 40 years in a federal prison, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
You'd be like, yes, Three Bean Salad was a Ponzi scheme. Of course it was. I'm sorry. There is no Sean Bean Lounge. It's completely fictional. None of this ever happened. I'm sorry.
Gasps from the gallery.
And it turns out that Henry was dating Andy McDowell. I'm sorry.
Journalists running out the back to phone in the copy to the paper. The Sean Bean Lounge is fictional. He said it. He said it right there. The Sean Bean Lounge is fictional. Stop press.
The bean markets are going crazy internationally. The bean markets don't know how to respond to this news. They're not sure they should be responding, but...
International shipping has ground to a halt across the world.
And Putin has invaded Spain. He's invaded Spain.
So the last time Mike used a pencil was in bed to do a crossword. I'm trying to think of the last time I used a pencil. I think it might be in the popular genre of tiny IKEA pencil.
Oh, yeah. What, to make an order?
Yes, the free pencil.
Well, you get a little slip of paper and you can write down the code on it so you know what.
What did you get?
Incredibly, in 2023, a CD rack.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
They're coming back. That's right, Ben. They're coming back.
Never went away.
Blimmin' heck. Blimmin' heck, Ben. What are you putting on? Blimmin' heck. What are you putting on a CD rack?
CDs.
Which CDs?
Me old CDs.
Your Blurs. Your Elasticas.
Ben, the album is dead. It is dead. Slip out songs now.
Listened to a CD last night. Best of Jeff Beck.
Ooh. Oh dear, I don't like the way this is going. I do not like where this is heading, guys.
I think the reason I'm still a bit of a CD person is that I can play them in my Hyundai i10.
Hold on to that, because there's no way the next gen are going to have that facility.
No, exactly.
It is quite good. The car seems to be the last sort of place where the CDs really have a place, isn't it?
Guys, this isn't really on topic, but I've got a new car.
Okay, keep talking.
It's an odd choice.
Is it a Hyundai i10?
No, so the Hyundai i10 I still own and haven't got rid of because I can't bring myself to do so. It hasn't now moved for 6 weeks. It's just sitting there.
Wow.
And I might just leave it and watch nature take it.
Mm. Is that where you're listening to your... We're understanding the CD thing a bit more. Is the CD rack in the i10? Is that where you're listening to... You're just communing with the i10.
The IKEA CD rack is in the boot.
I love the idea of it being in the passenger seat, Ben, and you driving around Cardiff. A man on a CD rack.
Well, it can't drive anymore, Henry. It's broken. It's dead.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry.
So it's just like another room of my house, but that lives on the street and smells really terrible. But it has got a CD player.
So it's like an outdoor toilet. That's no way for it to end its days, Ben. Don't even think about that. Forget I said that.
Yes, that's a great idea. I'm going to shit in it. Yes. Perfect.
I'm going to listen to best-of rock albums and shit in my old car. And they doubted me. In year 13, they said it'd come to nothing in the yearbook. Look at me now.
And look at me now, listening to CDs and shitting in a car.
And it's perfect. The glove compartment is where the toilet roll can go. Perfect.
No, you put it over the handbrake.
Oh, yeah.
You can get a couple of rolls on the handbrake.
Yeah. You wrench out your gear stick. Yeah. You've got a lovely kind of bog scrubber, haven't you? Toilet brush.
Yeah.
You can pretend to drive a car while doing a shit, which is what a lot of people enjoy doing. And
more realistically than you used to. You exactly. Don't have to mime that steering wheel anymore, Ben.
Just right there.
To make yourself boop, boop. To make yourself relax.
Yeah.
Yeah. You no longer have to mime it and just go, oh, I'm just poo-tilling around town. Yeah. Nothing bad's happening. I'm just poo-tilling around town.
It's poo-poo
poo-tilling.
Time.
Oh, and we're done. Also, it's already got that small carpet that goes around a toilet, the mini carpet. It's already got that in the footwell.
It's got those.
Yeah, it's lockable. It's self-misting once you've actually started the business of pissing and shitting in it for privacy.
Yeah.
I mean, a standing piss is going to be quite a sight, but I'd be interested to see how you get around it.
Well, if only it had a sunroof. Yeah.
It's the perfect non-plumbed outdoor toilet. And also, you don't even have to tell Thames Water about it. It is literally outside of their purview because it isn't plumbed.
Because there's nowhere near the Thames Water area.
And it's, this is a very London-centric based comment.
Are you not Thames Water out there?
Henry, what a myopic thing to say.
No, Thames Water, it's a concept. It's not literal. Do you think the Thames is washing away? It's just a name. It's a brand. The Thames is a brand more than it is an actual river now, Ben.
But it's also crucially a water company that exists only for London and the South East.
Oh, I thought... Okay. Yeah, no, that was myopic. Sorry.
You thought the whole country was on Thames Water? You disgust me.
That's classic London. Classic London attitude. Sorry. I tell you what, Ben. If I had time, I'd get on the Central Line and come out and visit you right now and apologise face to face.
So, Hyundai's dead, but just existing as an outdoor, very public toilet.
Musical toilet, yeah.
But it just so happened that my partner's mother is having to get rid of her car and was willing to give it to us. Very kind indeed.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm going to share with you an image of this car.
Ooh.
Got it?
So Ben has sent us a picture of a sort of metallic blue convertible car.
Bloody hell.
Parked on a beach.
Yeah, that's not the actual one. That's just
is that library footage?
It's the same model.
Oh, I'm really disappointed because the number plate looks like it might be from Slovakia or something. I can't. I thought there might be a bit of a backstory to this car.
It's quite sort of love. It's quite Lovejoy. I can see Lovejoy pulling up in that.
A modern Lovejoy.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I think when being driven around by a woman in her 60s, mm-hmm. it represents freedom, bit of fun.
Yeah.
Feeling of fun.
Yeah.
You know, someone who's that worked their whole life.
Letting their hair down.
Letting their hair down. Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's retire. Let's have a fun.
Bloody earn this treat. That kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
For me to drive it.
Yes.
It screams, please feel free to throw a tin of baked beans out of your bedroom window at this car as it goes past. What is it? What kind of car is it? God, I don't even know.
It's a 2006 Saab 9-3 convertible.
Saab 9-3. That sounds quite high end.
I've got to say, I absolutely love it.
Can I say, my guess, Ben, is when these things happen is you'll get it and it will be from day one, problems. Expensive problems. Expensive yeah. problems. We've got to replace the chassis. We've got to replace three out of the four wheels. Those wheels are no longer manufactured. Those wheels are going to have to be handmade by an Italian craftsperson.
In Nepal.
Well, it is a company that no longer exists, Saab, so I assume...
Does it not?
Unless they're still making that part for one of their fighter jets, which I think they are still making.
Right.
So you're going to have to get you're going to have to buy a reconditioned fighter jet in order to get parts.
Yeah, it's going in for MOT tomorrow, and I'm not that hopeful that it isn't going to be a complete money pit.
How exciting. Drop top. Yeah. BP in the drop top. The bean machine trailing out of the back. Like some Just Married cans on string.
But on the end of intestines.
Turning heads in Cardiff, left, right and centre.
So I've got to say, it is really enjoyable.
Is it?
Yeah, it is enjoyable.
It's a fact of human biology, isn't it? That at a certain point in life...
You want to eschew roofs.
This becomes an enjoyable feeling. To feel that engine thrumming, presumably, Ben, you've had that moment of, bloody hell. It might be a bit inconvenient, but that thrum. Whew. Have you felt that?
I mean, it's got a diesel engine. It sort of sounds like a tractor.
So it's diesel, is it?
Are you even allowed to drive it in Cardiff?
I think if we did bring in any kind of ULEZ thing, it would have to be turned into a cube immediately by the council.
It has the carbon footprint of a fighter jet, doesn't it? Ben, can I say, one thing I'll say about that car is, when you are, which you will be very, very soon, broken down on the edge of an A road, yeah, you will look like a prize Wally sitting in that waiting for help, won't you? Oh.
I think technically the AA and the RAC are allowed to simply drive on when they see a man standing by convertible.
So are you planning to have the roof up or down most of the time?
Well, when it's sunny, I have it down.
I mean, I would feel the need, because if I was driving around the car, I'd feel the need, I don't know if you will, to almost drive around almost saying to people, yeah, sorry, yeah, I'm not actually like this. This isn't...
this was given to us for free by my mother-in-law.
My mother gave it to me as a narrative. In fact, I'd almost, instead of having like guitar music or whatever blasting out of it, I'd have an explanation blasting out of it at all times, which is, let's say, it's not what you think.
My i10 is broken down. There's a sad bit to the story of the i10 is dead.
I'm shitting in my i10.
Don't get the wrong idea. I'm shitting in my i10. And I've got photos of me shitting in the i10 in my glove box here, which I'm very happy to share with you. Or go to my website, which is written down the side of the car, which is www.itsnotwhatyouthink.
Shitting in an i10.com.
I should have liked it. But it was a free car, so you took it. I mean,
yeah,
it'll be a gas guzzler. It'll be a diesel guzzler, won't it?
I filled it up, and it just kept going up. That number, oh
yeah, you're going to get to the point where it's all the nines. You've reached the end of the. It's all the nines. You're going to go to a separate pump. We're going to carry this on the next pump along. To the next pump along. You got all the nines. Ben, what you've done is the equivalent of, essentially, you've had a long and successful relationship with a dependable, loving, kind,
budget,
economically...
sexually conservative.
sexually conservative budget.
South Korean.
South Korean girlfriend. Yeah.
Yeah.
So essentially, if this is the chat down the pub, it's like, oh, how's it going with Hyundai? You know, how's that going? And you're like, well, actually, I've ended it with her, and you're now going out with a Swedish,
an elderly Swedish,
an elderly, a retired Swedish lady who only drinks diesel.
Whose CD player doesn't work and whose air conditioning needs regassing, apparently, but I don't know what that means.
Yeah. But on the plus side, you can lift the top of her head off when it's sunny. You can lift the top of her head off. And then you can slot it back down sometime when it's less sunny. When it's raining and rain gets in, slot it back down again. Isn't it? No, but Ben, what's going to happen is, you know, you're going to feel that, I don't think we didn't need to dress this up. You're going to feel that thrum between your legs, aren't you? In this new model, you're going to feel that.
Mm. It is nice being able to go to drive uphill. That's quite a nice feeling. Yeah,
because you were on exclusive downhill, weren't you, before?
Hyundai, you had to plan the route. So it was downhill all the way. That was the only way.
Yeah. Which is why you had to have the extendable MC Escher platforms, didn't you?
Exactly. Yeah.
Which is a complex series of platforms, ball bearings. And perspectival illusions.
And thought.
Mm. Yeah. The problem is, in an i10, if you ever end up in Belgium or Holland, that's it. You have to live there forever.
Yeah.
So you have to avoid the low countries.
Avoid the low countries.
It's basically like a lobster pot for those cars.
Yeah. So, no, but what's going to happen is, you're going to find that this your new Swedish lover is going to be, I think, probably quite problematic in terms of demanding.
Right.
Because that South Korean girl, she didn't need special treatment, did she? Whereas this one, it's going to be... I don't know what I'm doing metaphorically, but I think... I don't know. Maybe safer to move on. I don't know.
I'll let you know if it gets through the MOT or if we have to scrap that Swedish woman.
So it's still not, MOT'd?
No. Well,
Can I say I'm glad that this is a podcast. You have to listen from the beginning, because if this was on live radio, there's a chance that you turn on at the point of just hearing a pause, and then someone going, "So it's not MOT'd."
Boop, straight off again.
Straight off.
No, it's due. It's MOT.
Oh, okay. That's more like it.
That has to happen more than once, by the way, Henry. Crucially.
Oh, so it's not just one. It's not like a degree.
I'm afraid not. No.
No.
Time to read your emails.
When you send an email, you must give thanks to the postmasters that came before.
Good morning, postmaster. Anything for me?
Just some old shit.
When you send an email, this represents progress. Like a robot shoeing a horse.
Give me your health.
My beautiful horse.
Time to read your emails. First email is from Roz.
Thank you, Roz.
And this is responding to a few episodes ago. We talked about how birthday cards are often just quite insulting.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Roz says, look what I found in a shop today. Isn't it horrendous?
Which reads, time for some Botox, you baggy-faced trollop.
Wow. What occasion is that card for?
18th birthday.
Yeah. I mean, that's case closed right there, isn't it? Thank you, Roz.
Roz also writes, also, I'm starting uni in a few weeks.
Ooh.
Wish me luck.
Oh, good luck, Roz. What an adventure.
Brilliant. Good luck, Roz.
Excellent.
I wish I was going to uni.
I feel quite jealous, genuinely.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh. What would you, from what you've learned, Ben, in your life, how would you sort of hit uni differently from how you did first time round?
I'd definitely arrive in a Saab 9-3 convertible.
Hopefully Roz is writing this down.
Yeah. That would be quite an entrance you'd make. Freshers Week.
Whew. I'm trying to think if I've got any genuine advice I would give. There is a weird bit of advice that I heard that is definitely true, or was definitely true in my case, which was that the friends you make in the first week will not be your friends by the end of the first year.
Interesting.
But the friends you make in the second week will be your friends for life.
Yeah, that hasn't happened for me either. But...
That sort of did happen to me.
Yeah.
I first week of uni, I stayed in my room, listened to Radio 4.
Did you?
Because I was late and I missed the kind of the initial meet and greet with the sort of the initial social event of all freshers meeting each other, pairing off and making love in a huge vat of lager. I essentially missed that. I missed the sort of fun intro bit.
How? Yeah, how did you miss it?
I can't remember how I missed it. I was disorganised.
Okay.
But I missed it. And I think this is something useful to hear maybe, that I thought, that's it. I am not going to make any friends at university.
Oh, my God.
My friends now are Mark Lawson, Sue Lawley, and the rest of the Radio 4 team.
And the rest of the Radio 4 gang. And I just listened to the radio for the first week. That's all I did. I stayed in my room. I was just embarrassed. I didn't, and I felt everyone was getting to know each other, and all I could hear was noises of copulation. In my mind, everyone was just making love, you know, having highbrow chats and just pouring lager onto each other's faces. And I was just by myself in my room.
This is very sad.
This is deeply tragic.
But I genuinely thought this. I've missed the boat. And also this means in later life I won't have friends. So I will live. I will live a lonely life. But actually, it was just fine. Just took a bit of time. And then eventually, me, Bozza, Wozza, Dr. Nodge, And the Bastard Brigade.
And Scrappy the dog.
We became absolute bloody oi 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 legends. Going around the town centre, pissing on anything that wasn't moving. Yes!
And some things that were.
And some things that were. Tell you what smashed me and this this decorative bush because I've smashed it up. That sort of banter.
Yeah. This is great stuff for Roz.
And we were getting street signs and moving them around, putting things on our heads that weren't supposed to be there.
Yeah.
And it was ruddy great. So,
if you could drive in with that Saab 93 with something on your head that's not supposed to be on your head, traveling your own road sign, you're on to a winner.
Mike, what's your big piece of advice for Roz?
Ooh, I don't think I necessarily have very good advice.
Oh, I've got one, actually. I've thought of one.
Also, just quick point, she didn't ask for advice.
Okay, Henry, let's move on.
Well, in that case, Roz, beware of older men giving you unsolicited advice.
She already knows that. This wasn't real. This was a warning.
But Mike, you saying beware of old men giving advice is like the Socratic paradox, isn't it? Because you are giving advice.
Because if every time you go try and cross a pond and you go halfway, you never get to the end of the pond.
Exactly.
Exactly that. The Socratic paradox is if you know that you know nothing, you then know something. So it's impossible to know nothing.
But we test that as hard as we can on this podcast. We like to think we're getting bloody close.
Take that, Socrates. That's what we say when we turn off the recording every week.
Yeah. And also, if you want to get across the other end of the pond, you have to go halfway each time. Why don't you just walk round the pond?
Just keep going. Just do it. Just do it in one.
Roz, my advice is to do some sport. Okay, that's the end.
Is it because that's your greatest regret, is it?
Yeah.
Did you not do any sport?
I left university and then I didn't do any sport or any kind of activity whatsoever. And then I left and then never in life again will you have the chance to kind of have Wednesday afternoon off on a consistent basis, play badminton with people your own age.
Okay. That's interesting.
It's true. It's very hard to play badminton with people your own age, isn't it, at this point?
You have to play with elderly people.
Obviously, I could play it with the elderly because I could go to an old people's home and I could offer to help people by playing badminton. They'd welcome me with open arms. Yeah. And obviously, any child you can play badminton with, pretty much. I mean, ask them, they'll generally be up for it. But if I was to ask you, Ben, to play badminton with me...
It's going to trigger a well of regret and... difficult emotions.
No, I'm genuine. There are facilities for you to use that you'll never get again. You know, like there's stuff to do that I just didn't bother with. And I'd have a hot bod now if I'd done that. If I'd played badminton once a week.
Come on, Ben.
I'd have
Come on,
hot
Ben.
Badminton
I don't want to hear
bod.
That kind of talk. Let's not have any self-shaming bodminton talk.
Bodminton.
you don't need a hot bod. You've got a convertible Saab.
Exactly. That is your hot bod. And remember, Ben, if people are standing, if people are on ground level and sitting down and they look at you, effectively all they can see is your head and your bod is the Saab, mm-hmm. effectively. You're a head moving around on a Saab bod. It's true, though, that being a student age is the only time when playing badminton is kind of like socially acceptable unless you're Olympic level.
Mm.
So, like, yes. For some students, you play badminton. If I was to tell you I'm into badminton now, I mean, you'd cock an eyebrow, wouldn't you? You'd be arching your face.
Oh, I think it was another banjo is what I think.
Mike, are you saying then that my banjo, I'm not, within how long will I put down my banjo forever?
Ooh.
Ben, I think you can have an active sex life well into your 80s these days. It's not... I do have some advice for Rolls, by the way.
Do you really?
Now is the time to pretend you like jazz. Later in life, it becomes... You just haven't got time.
I don't think that's true.
Whereas now, you can buy some jazz LPs. You can tell people you like jazz. No one's really going to test you on it. I think that now's the time for that.
But what if Roz is about to make a friend for life and all that friend wants to hear is Roz telling the truth about Roz's opinion about jazz?
Oh, that's true, yeah.
That's what they need at that point.
Okay, yeah. Stick to your jazz truth.
Don't go the way of the beans.
Well, Roz, have a lovely time.
Have a lovely time, Roz.
Sorry about the advice, Barrage. We're just jealous and excited for you.
Okay, it's time for listener theological correction of the week.
Ooh.
Sanctu Domine. Oi.
Dan writes, I'm sure I'm not the first person to correct you on this, but in the Jonah story in the Bible, it's a big fish, not a whale, that swallows Jonah.
Good grief. Do we just have to delete half of the whales episode now?
However, as a pastor, I'm not keen on using the B word.
Brian?
Fair enough.
Bollocking.
Oh, sorry. Yeah.
Bollocking. Yeah.
But he's a man of the Lord. He doesn't want to swear. It's fair enough. So let's call it a theological correction.
Fair play.
And he's written, feel free to create a jingle, which I will if I've got time. But I've got a lot of drop-top driving to do this week.
Your hair's going to have a permanent, like, sort of towels, you know, like, swept back look from all
You're
the...
not going to be able to get your headphones on.
Yeah. I think that's a fair theological correction, although I'd say when the Bible was written, that was before people knew that whales were mammals and not fish, I'm guessing. So that when they said big fish, they might have been referring to a whale.
Ooh.
Are you telling an ordained a minister that the Bible is incorrect?
No, I'm not saying it's incorrect. I'm just saying probably at that point, fish was a hold-all term for whales and what we now know to be a separate subspecies, fish.
You're thinking that the monk who translated it and transcribed it into English in Lindisfarne, which is almost certainly wrong again.
Yeah.
Just uses a sort of catch-all name.
Right on, yeah.
So is that theological correction accepted?
I think it's for me to accept or deny because I think I was the one who started.
Okay.
I do accept it.
Theological correction accepted.
And lo, the bollocking was heard throughout the heavens.
Finally, email from Tom. Hi, Beans.
Hello, Tom.
With a new baby.
Ooh.
Congratulations on the new baby, Tom.
Congrats. All babies are new, but carry on. If you've got an old baby, please email us in and maybe send us some photos.
He says, unlike many, I've been re-listening to the Three Bean Salad catalogue to keep me awake during the long night feeds. Mm-hmm. After listening to your discussion of the hypothetical porcine novelty mustard brand Kerrigan's, I find myself singing, Bring Me the Kerrigan's, under my breath while playing Lego with my three-year-old. Your new three-year-old?
Shop-soiled?
He inquired about the song, and something about the haunting refrain stuck. Now I find myself cursed by the Kerrigan's jingle. With the endless repeated refrain of Bring Me the Kerrigan's, he'll sing in bed at 5 a.m, shout it in the supermarket, scream it at other children in the park.
It's Kerrigan's time, it's Kerrigan's time.
Bring me the Kerrigan's, bring me the Kerrigan's.
Advice, please, on lifting the Kerrigan curse is welcome. Many thanks,
Tom. I
don't
think it can be lifted. I think what we've discovered is that Ben has a singular talent for mustard jingles.
Yeah.
That will worm into a three-year-old's head.
Yeah, maybe capitalism needs to have a reboot. And what we do is Ben writes a jingle for a product. And if that is cursed and is a proper earworm, someone needs to make that product. It needs to be the other way around now.
Maybe we should create Kerrigan's mustard.
Well, we better get in touch with Philip Kerrigan in the first instance, see what Philip says about it.
The first condiment that started with a jingle.
I'm also interested to know whether the child is singing it or just shouting it.
Bring me the Kerrigan's! And will someone one day actually bring the child the Kerrigan's? And what will that look like? And are there other kinds of Kerrigan's?
I foresee in 20 years' time a kind of viral video where we bring a 23-year-old man the first jar of Kerrigan's and he just breaks down. Thank you.
After a two-decade-long research phase.
That'll be great telly when at the moment when he opens the top of the Kerrigan's and just bursts into tears.
Oh, it's water cooler stuff, isn't it?
So you've got no advice really for Tom?
Well, I think, you know, that's what an earworm is, isn't it, Ben? I mean, you're a hit maker.
Only gets killed by the next earworm.
You know, what can you do?
Well, maybe move him onto the Patreon jingle.
You can just circle him around the different BP jingles, I would. Tom, sorry. Pick your favourite. You'll hate it eventually when the same thing happens.
I'd quite like to see a three-year-old shouting in the playground, Henry's Beefcake Journey, at another child. That's our emails. Thanks to everyone who has sent us emails. If you'd like to do so, threebeansaladpod@gmail.com.
There is a bit of a notice as well, of course. this episode going out, I don't know when you're listening to it, but it's going out on Wednesday, the 13th of September, 2023. Now, if you're still in 2023 and it's before, when is it? The 16th and 17th of September, i.e. very soon, we're doing some live shows at the London Podcast Festival, but we are streaming all three of them. And streaming tickets are very much still available, if you're keen.
Yeah. Also, if you buy a streaming ticket and you're not able to watch the show at the time that it happens, live, which I would recommend, because I think you can send us messages on a sort of chat board while it's going, which we will try to take notice of, although it's quite hard when you're also trying to entertain a room full of people.
Sounds great, this.
But if you can't do that, you can buy tickets that last. I mean, how long do they last? I did look this up.
I think it's a week. So basically, you've got a week to watch the show after it's happened. Or you can watch it live, or you can then access it for further, I think, 5 days or 7 days.
And there are three. There's Saturday, this is all 2023. Saturday the 16th, 7 p.m. Sunday the 17th, 2 p.m. Sunday the 17th, 4:30 p.m. It's all UK time. All different shows, of course.
I would say that by the 4:30 on Sunday one, we're going to be pretty shagged. I mean,
that's going to be dog shit, that one. Isn't it? The Sunday 4:30 one, yeah. A complete waste of time.
Also, it's right in the post-lunch Henry Packer slump, which is the most dangerous time.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. It's such a dangerous time.
To try and get anything out of Henry.
But if you are listening in Japan or something live, then that might make for quite good bedtime, sleepy time listening, you know? It'll just be...
Yeah, it might be quite soothing.
Yeah, it'll just be sort of quite quiet, the occasional cough from an audience member. to help you get to sleep.
Yeah.
The soft discussions you can hear of people saying, did they do refunds for this? Or?
Yeah, so that's happening.
Yeah, it'll be good fun. So if you want tickets, I'll put a link to the tickets in the show notes. If you want to find them on Google, if you Google King's Place, that's the name of the venue where it's taking place, and on that website you can find the tickets.
Very good. Thank you. Hopefully see you there.
And if you're coming, we look forward to seeing you there. Yeah. Thanks to everyone who signed up on our Patreon.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
It's the way to get bonus episodes. And if you sign up at the Sean Bean tier, you get a shout out from Mike in the Sean Bean Lounge, where you were last night, Mike.
Sure was.
A quiet one in the lounge, I heard.
Yeah, quieter than last week, I'd say. But still, you know, good times had by all. It being the...
Was it the dressed as a sailor sleepover?
It was. Thank you, Ben. And here's my report.
It was the dressed as a sailor sleepover at the Sean Bean Lounge last night. Mr. Sam Passmore, who came dressed as a Northumbrian tidal river pilot, put in an early request that there be no bedtime, a motion which was seconded by Shazad, dressed as a Portmuthian maitlow, and thirded by Jennifer Wigsell, who came as Norse raider and dab hand with a Viking long dinghy, Ivar the Boneless. But the motion was vetoed by Richard Lilly in his Horatio Nelson The Statue Years costume. This veto caused some consternation when at a mere 9:30 p.m. Richard Lilly phoned home and asked to be picked up, citing homesickness brought on by general fear brought on by a scary story told to him by Adam Forrest, dressed as Gronya O'Malley the Pirate Queen, about Dane Yates putting on a haunted midi blouse and turning into a crap sardine with the face and hands of Steve Wheatley. There were further problems when Yelini, dressed as a mid-17th century Welsh bosun, rang the ship's bell to declare it midnight feast time at a mere 10:42 p.m. Midnight feast purists, Craig McMenemy and Claire Murney, both dressed as former US President Jimmy Carter during his time as a submariner aboard the USS Pomfret, cried merry hell at this and insisted the feast, comprising of ship's biscuits baked by Ben 3 months earlier, with the weevils removed by Thomas Fardell on the day, be served at the stroke of midnight and not a moment before. Scotty Jones, dressed as the dread buccaneer Blackbeard, cut a sad figure at this point as he burst into tears and extinguished his beard tapers. Scotty, it emerged, was starving, having not eaten dinner before arriving, as Atika Raymond had told him there was bound to be popcorn with the movie, open brackets, Master and Commander starring Russell Crowe, close brackets, and Andrew Somerville had led him to believe that cold pizza and carrot battens might also be available early doors. Boz, dressed as sailing Olympian Hannah Mills OBE, came to Scotty's defence and declared the term midnight feast itself to be a fundamentally flawed misnomer, no midnight feast ever having been eaten at or after midnight, an attestation which was disputed by Neil McCulloch, dressed as John Paul Jones, but the American Revolutionary sailor, not the Led Zeppelin bassist, who reckoned he'd once had a midnight feast at exactly midnight, and that it was an actual proper feast and not just some smuggled-in Jaffa cakes. This claim was self-undermined, however, by a further claim made the same evening by Neil, that at the last sleepover he went to, they were allowed to watch Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and they saw the actual ghost of a UFO. Callum Hayden, Keith Thompson, and Dion Van Heerden were thrown in the brig for making a den out of Sean Bean's collection of antique deck shoes. Richard Bullman, in costume as Ernest Shackleton's pet stick insect, Onslaught, was cobbed and furked for drinking squash after he'd brushed his teeth. Sophie J came as a powder monkey, but got so into the role she climbed down and got trapped within the barrel of Sean Bean's Boromir t-shirt cannon and missed the whole thing. And Bastion was declared landlubber of the night for coming dressed as the famously waterphobic Carmen Electra. Thanks all.
Okay, that's the podcast. We'll finish the podcast with a version of our theme tune sent in by a listener. This one is from James from Manchester.
Thank you, James.
This is a really deep cut in terms of making reference to a thing that happened maybe over a year ago. Ooh. Where we talked about whether there was such a thing as F flat.
Oh, yes.
Now, without wanting to reopen that barrel of snakes, I am going to read out his email. He's wants to tell us that there is such a thing as F flat. And to prove it, I have reharmonized your theme tune to include an F flat.
Wow.
And he's attached a recording of himself playing it on the cello.
Ooh.
He's also attached a transcription of sheet music to show us why, essentially, it is part of an augmented sixth chord and needs to be and F flat because it resolves down to E flat. Obviously, you can't resolve E natural to E flat.
Come on.
Becomes so obvious when he says it that way.
Oh,
isn't it?
That actually makes complete sense. Yeah.
Great.
Anyway, he's played it on the cello and he sent it in.
Well, thanks, James. So,
thank you, James.
And thanks everyone for listening. Cheerio.
Bye.
Okay, I get it now.
I get it now. F flat.
Because you can't rasterize. Because you can't rasterize a C upwards. But if you start from the point of view from the D, the F is actually within the D, isn't it? Carpaccio.